with the practice of rain. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions.
Yeah, I gave as an example, let's say I am having a belief that I'm falling short in this moment, and I've asked myself the question, what am I believing? Then I'll want to come right back into my body and say, okay, so how does that feel when I'm believing that? If I really believe I'm failing, oh, that sinking feeling, that ache, that soreness right here in my heart. So we come right back to where we feel it in the body. And as I describe in Radical Compassion, because it's really kind of a manual for rain, there's a lot of really powerful questions we can ask with investigation. And we want to keep looping back into the body to where we find the response to those questions. And I'll share with you some of the questions I think are the most important to remember. And one is, where am I feeling this in my body? Another is, what am I believing right now? Another question is, what does this vulnerable place most need? And that's the question I asked you, Justine, because that is where we begin to transition to nurturing. When we ask that question, what does this part of me most need right now? Or how does this place want me to be with it? That's when we start tapping into that deeper part of us that knows, oh, we want nurturing in some form or other. We want nurturing. Now, it might be nurturing as in embracing and holding, and it might be nurturing as in a message saying, you know, you can trust yourself, you're really okay. Or it might be nurturing as in forgive yourself or accept yourself. But it's some form of kindness that we discover in that place. And it's only when we've really nurtured ourselves that we can then rest in after the rain, which will actually be the presence that emerges when there's really been kindness.
That's a whole field that's available to us, the field of kindness, isn't it? And in these days, we're bombarded with all sorts of energies that want to take us away from kindness. I mean, we have a lot of opportunities to react.
Exactly.
And so you're saying to come back to the body, feel it in the body and allow it, and then go to a nurturing place, a self-nurturing. We can do that.
The thing that I have found again and again is that the nurturing will not come naturally unless we have honestly contacted the vulnerability. So that's why investigating is so important. Because if we say, okay, I'm recognizing and allowing that I'm angry, or I'm recognizing and allowing that I'm afraid or anxious, but we don't feel it fully in our bodies, the natural tenderness in response to ourselves doesn't arise. So there's a key piece in there that we have to feel our vulnerability. I'll give you an example in my own life.
Oh, please.
Yeah, well, I spent a number of years where I was in a downward spiral of illness. And I got really caught in it. I was I have a disease, a genetic disorder that has to do with connective tissue, and I was losing my mobility, and I had no reason to believe I was going to come out of it. And so during that, and by the way, I'm much, much better now for many reasons, but during that time, I would hit all sorts of kind of walls where I'd feel irritable and impatient and angry, and then really down on myself for not being the kind of spiritual sick person. I had an idea of how I should be being sick. And I remember when I started doing rain with that, and it was really a deep trance of unworthiness. And I would notice how I was, you know, angry and irritable, and I'd allow it. And then I'd start investigating. And again, I'd find that belief, I'm failing. I'm not doing this right. You know, I talk all the time about being able to be with different things going on in our lives, but here I am all small-minded and uptight. And then as I'd investigate, I'd actually let myself like feel in my body that sense of failure And sometimes I invite people to actually take the posture of failure or take the posture of anger and, you know, with your fists and your face and everything. And I'd really let myself feel that failure. And then I would ask myself, how long have I been feeling this? And I'd realize all the moments in my life that I've been caught in that trance of unworthiness. And it was then that I could feel a real sense of sorrow and wanting to nurture, when I realized how many of our life moments have we sacrificed to being down on ourselves? How many life moments when we could have felt intimate with others or enjoyed the night sky have we been turned on ourselves? And when I could sense the kind of loss of life moments to this trance of unworthiness, that's when I could put my hand on my heart and say, it's okay, sweetheart. And I often offer some sort of a phrase that is tender towards myself as a way to, you know, really express that compassion. And so when I can do that and really feel that wash of tenderness towards myself, then I could relax into after the rain, where I realized I'm not the failing self that's doing sickness wrong. I'm this compassionate presence, this field of compassionate presence. And it's a hard time, you know. And the gift of rain is the shift in identity. Because we go from, in some way, being in a reactive trance and believing in a limited self, believing in it that we're an angry self or an endangered self or a blaming, judging self or whatever it is. We shift from that to this formless space of kindness and wakefulness, which is really the freedom that's described in every spiritual path.
So what I'm getting from what you're saying is that when we're in that reactive trance, we feel so separated from that ocean of loving, kindness, compassion, whatever that ocean is that we're actually living in. We're swimming in that ocean, but we kind of put this bubble around ourselves and just think that we got to do it all ourselves rather than, I guess when you say vulnerability, I think, oh, that bubble just burst and then we sink into that ocean of compassion.
Well, I love the metaphor of ocean and waves. When we're stuck, we're identifying with a very limited set of waves. We're identifying with the anger that's coming up in the moment or the frustration or the shame. For me, the sense of failure. And that defines the self. And when we take the time to bring the mindfulness and compassion of rain to what's going on, we rediscover our oceanness. And that's the gift. And what happens when we don't bring mindfulness and compassion is that we keep on moving through our life as a very limited cluster of waves. And it blocks intimacy with our inner life. It blocks intimacy with each other. And it prevents us from being creative and spontaneous because we're living in a very small set of patterns.
One of the stories that you use, a teaching story, let's say, in the book, is about the Golden Buddha. So maybe you could share that story, because I think it has something to do with what you're talking about.
Well, I'm glad you're mentioning it. It's one of the stories that's most affected my life, actually. The story is that in Southeast Asia, there was a very, very massive statue of the Buddha, not particularly handsome or beautiful, but people loved it for its staying power. It had endured through centuries of changing governments and through wars and battles and weather, changing weather and so on. But in the 1950s, some cracks appeared in it. And enterprising monk took a flashlight and peered inside the cracks. And what shone back was the gleam of gold. And so they started taking off the plaster clay that was the covering, as it turns out, and discovered it was the largest solid gold Buddha in Southeast Asia. And the monks believed that in prior generations that it had been covered over to protect it through really through a war where they thought that it would be stolen. And they believe that it's the same way that we cover over our gold as we enter a difficult life. And every one of us is entering a society where there is dividedness and addiction and all sorts of ignorance and reactivity. So we cover over our gold. And the suffering comes when we get identified with the coverings, so that we get identified with the self that is trying to promote itself in a competitive way, or we get identified with our appearance, or we get identified with our defensiveness or our judgments or whatever the ego system is that we're using to try to promote and defend ourselves. And the freedom comes when we start seeing that and holding it with compassion. It's not our fault that we're judgmental, and it's not our fault that we get angry or frustrated. And it's not our fault that we get defensive. We're just trying to make it on the planet. And so when we can see it and hold it with compassion, then that covering starts getting more transparent, and we start trusting the gold that's always been and is and always will be our deepest nature.
So, Tara, what you're talking about, it's not airy-fairy, sky in the high, you know, oh, everything is lovely and we're just, I'm going to bliss out. You're talking about something very practical, on the ground practicality of how to really deal with the frustrations and the unconscious, as you say, below the line behavior of reactivity and all the strong emotions that just automatically, our habitual automatic habits of reaction to going, living above the line and being conscious.
Exactly. It's recognizing that it's conditioning, and we did not get born on the planet and sign up for, oh, I'd like the conditioning that makes me neurotic and makes me controlling and makes me obsessive, and I'd like to be the worry one. You know, we don't sign up for these things. These are just the ways our nervous system is trying to make it through. And one of my favorite descriptions of how that happens is if you imagine that you're on a walk in the woods and you see a dog under a tree and you go, oh, I'm going to pet that dog and say hello. And then the dog lurches at you and its fangs are bared and it's ferocious. And you go from being friendly to, oh, angry and bad dog and being afraid. But then you see that the dog's leg is in a trap. And then you shift again and you go, oh, you poor thing. Well, and you might not go and pet it because it's dangerous, but your heart is open. Well, when we act in ways that are defensive or aggressive, or other people do, our legs are in a trap.
And Tara, I'd like to talk about how rain fits in with the evolutionary human growth of our species and our growing capacity for empathy and self-awareness and how this can be taken out in the world as well.
Wonderful, because I love the evolutionary perspective. And it's so interesting to me that for millions of years, we're hunter-gatherers. But in the last 10 to 20,000 years, we kind of had a spurt, you know, in our growth. And we were able to experience compassion and collaboration beyond just kin. In other words, we really had, we're starting to widen the circles of compassion. And as Pinker says in Better Angels of Your Nature, there has been increasingly less violence over the last few centuries. The trajectory is a movement from I, or feeling of separateness, to we, a feeling of belonging. You know, Mother Teresa says that if we're suffering, it's because we've forgotten our belonging. And I look at radical compassion as pathways of remembering that we belong to each other's hearts, and that our trajectory as a species is in that direction towards we, and we can facilitate it. In other words, compassion is already hardwired, and what we're finding, especially neuroscience is showing in the last 10, 15 years, is we can directly facilitate the growth of caring. We can care more and widen the circles. And I see it with Rain all the time. I mean, I'm thinking right now of one man, because you brought up anger earlier, who had he had a really difficult time with anger, and it was affecting his family and his employees and so on. And so he started practicing with Rain, and he, you know, he would be able to feel the anger rising, and now and then he could pause. But it was hard because anger is, you know, a very compelling energy. But I want to share one of his successes because it just totally touched me. And he had a man at work who ran one of his groups and had come met with him and shared with him, look, we're behind schedule. And I know this is going to affect the, you know, I know this is going to affect your, the whole contract we're in. And typically this man I'm talking about would have absolutely blown a stack and attacked right in the moment. But he paused. And in that pause, he noticed this guy was being really honest, and he remembered that he had just been with them a long time and he was a really decent being. And so when the man told him that, instead of pouncing on him, he said, look, I'm sure you're trying the best you can. The guy was stunned. He said, you know, I wasn't going to tell you this, but my wife has fourth degree breast cancer, and it's been a really difficult time. And Justine, these two men hugged in that moment. This was not part of the culture of their office. And he told me it was a moment where he was actually the human he wanted to be. And that if he hadn't been practicing to just recognize and allow and pause and feel in his body and so on, he would have ended up causing more suffering to somebody who was already in a very, very painful situation. I have seen over and over again how not only does Rain awaken our self-compassion, but it gives us the pause and the deepened quality of presence that lets us see the vulnerability in others and respond with kindness. I see it over and over, it widening the circles. And I think of Jarvis Masters, who's been a prisoner out here in San Quentin for so long. And he has this beautiful phrase, that bird has my wings. That bird has my wings. That's to say that everybody we meet in the deepest way does not want to suffer and wants to be happy and wants to love and be loved and wants to belong. And that if we can remember that, if we can move through life and see that everybody's struggling hard and see the vulnerability, we're going to respond with kindness. And Rain trains us to do that, not just with our inner life, but once we practice Rain for ourselves, we can begin to look at another person and recognize and allow what's going on for them and deepen our investigation and ask that question. There's a civil rights activist, Ruby Sales, who has this question, where does it hurt? We can begin to investigate and sense for another person, where does it hurt? And we can begin to send our care energetically or through our smile or a hug or in some form in a way that really can transform our world.
I know that you tell a story on yourself. You mentioned Ruby Sales, and you at one point were working with groups about racism. And it was a mixed group of white people and African-American and maybe others. And
let me see if I can do a capsule summary that with one woman, one African-American woman got very upset with me because I wanted to have a little more space between meetings because I was going through a period of real sickness. And I was really upset with her because she wasn't sensitive to the fact that I was really struggling with my health. And so I remember doing Rain on the, you know, after the conversation was done, and I could bring compassion to myself and underneath the anger, feel the hurt. And then I started to try to bring Rain to her, and I got really stuck. I could not sense, well, how possibly could she have acted that way? And then I talked to a mutual friend, another woman of color, and she said, you know, for you, this work you're doing together is voluntary. But for her, it's absolutely non-negotiable. This is her life. That's right. For an African-American woman, this, you know, in our society, African-Americans are truly threatened all the time on some level. It's a bodily experience, as Ta-Nehisi Coates puts it. It's a bodily experience of being threatened. And she had a grandson in jail. And so it woke me up to how my whiteness had biased me. First of all, just the power of my position to even say, let's not have our meetings so often, but also just the privilege of being able to participate in this, but not have it be a necessity. And I'll share with you one last piece, Justine, on this, which was my husband and I were on a vacation and we were swimming out to this island. And I remember swimming and feeling, oh my gosh, I am pretty fit. My strokes were graceful and I felt strong and steady. But on the way back, it turned out I got exhausted and it was awkward and uncomfortable. I was really working on my breath. Turned out that I had been carried out by the currents. And then I realized so profoundly how my entire life as a white person is carried by currents of privilege and how not being aware of that cuts me off. It cuts me off. It gives me a bubble of privilege, but it actually cuts me off from the realness of humans everywhere, that so many of us, because of our race, our religion, because of our sexual orientation, our gender identity, are cut off. So just recognizing that was actually part of coming above the line in a way that really has enriched my life.
So what you're doing with RAIN is you're taking your meditation practice, but you're grounding it in some way, in a way to participate in the world with yourself and with others.
That's exactly right. It's RAIN with myself, RAIN in my relationships, and also bringing RAIN to our societal identities. It's beyond the individual to more of our social identities. So we really begin to sense the belonging that's possible that gets cut off when we haven't brought into the light of awareness the different ways that our bias and perception separate us.
And I think that you said earlier about how there's less violence in the world, but what we're facing these days is more reporting on what violence there is.
I think that's a really powerful observation, that we are more aware of the violence that is. And I think we're having a spike. In other words, even though there's a general decrease in violence, I think right now the world is in a spike of fear. And when humans are unable to face and process fear, we become very dangerous. And so I think we have fear, which actually makes us greedier and more grasping, which makes us violate the earth in a way that is frightening and bringing up mourning and grief in all of us, and we're violating each other. The racism is spiking, and tribalism is big right now. So there is a dividedness, but here's where I see the hope. Never in the history of humanity have so many people been consciously, deliberately practicing in ways that can wake up their hearts and minds. And it's spreading very, very quickly. We can actually change the structure and function of our brain, and we can wake up our hearts to care more. So the I to we is happening. And just what we're talking about today, this is where it's possible for people all over to begin to sense we are friends. We belong to each other, not just humans, non-human species too. We belong to this living web.
Thank you so much for being with us, Tara. I've been speaking with Dr. Tara Brock, and she's the author of Radical Compassion, Learning to Love Yourself and Your World with the Practice of RAIN. And if you want to know more about her work, you can go to her website, tarabrock.com, and she spells her name T-A-R-A-B-R-A-C-H, tarabrock.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You've been listening to New Dimensions.
You've been listening to a New Dimensions Archive Edition, recorded in 2020. New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the donate button. You can also subscribe to our free weekly podcasts and find over 1,000 hours of audio dialogues in our searchable archive. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Radio in Santa Rosa, California, USA. Our executive producer is Justine Willis-Toms. Our post-production editor is Lou Judson. For over 4 decades, New Dimensions has been producing weekly conversations at the leading edge. We sincerely thank all of you who have supported us by being members of Friends of New Dimensions, as well as members of our affiliate stations. My name is Dan Drayson. On behalf of everyone at New Dimensions, whose endeavors make this program possible, I'm wishing you well. New Dimensions Radio is an independent producer supported by listener contributions. To find out more about the program you've just heard, to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and our New Dimensions and New Dimensions Cafe podcasts, and to access thousands of other programs in the New Dimensions archive, please visit our website, newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org. Or call us at 707-468-5215. That's 707-468-5215. Please join us next time as we explore New Dimensions.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, your alternative to mainstream media. Broadcasting from Simon Fraser University at Burnaby Mountain, British Columbia.
This is Bird Note. What is it that draws us to a romantic partner? For birds, it might be a sweet song, compatible personality type, the right zesty scent, or outrageous dance moves. The serenade of a male white-throated sparrow prompts a response in a female sparrow's brain that resembles that of humans listening to their favorite music. Most cranes, like these sandhill cranes, duet with prospective partners for years before they begin breeding. For Stella's jays, birds of a feather pair together. Couples in which individuals have a similar temperament, either both shy or both bold, tend to be the most successful at raising chicks. Crested auklets of both sexes produce a pungent citrus perfume. Field biologists can smell a breeding colony from a boat as they approach. Blue-footed boobies, on the other hand, dance. The birds display their feet to each other in a ponderous pas de deux, a sort of dance duet. The bluer a bird's feet are, the healthier the bird is. Greater flamingos that have a larger repertoire of dance moves are considered more attractive, and the best dancers tend to pair up. How typical. For Bird Note, I'm Wenfei Tong.
My name is Jamie Hill. I'm the Design and Communications Manager at Embark Sustainability. I think my favorite thing about Embark is that you do not have to be the climate know-it-all. You don't have to know everything about the issues that are going on. You really just need the passion to get started. So depending on what you're interested in, you might have a unique skill or interest that you don't think is applicable to climate at all, and it turns out you are the people that we need to be part of a community. So I'd really encourage anybody who has even an inkling of interest in climate or food justice to get on board. Embark Sustainability Society is an independent, student-centered nonprofit working across SFU campuses. Embark focuses on climate and food justice in their programs and initiatives. Some of their ongoing work includes their food rescue program, learning gardens, and sustainability career nights. Discover your role in building a sustainable future based on your unique skills and interests. Learn more at embarksustainability.org and follow along on Instagram at embarksustain.